So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to this bonus edition of the Media Podcast, brought to you this week by Social Circle. Today on the pod, we consider the world of influencers. That particular school of marketing, which pays celebrities to endorse products, has been given a boost thanks to Twitter feeds and YouTube stars. Over the next hour, we'll lift the lid on this industry with a panel of marketing gurus and their brand endorsers. You'll hear from Chris Crosson from Chorus, James Erskine, director of Social Circle, Chris Jackson, social lead of The Supergroup, Mark Walker of talent company Free Focus, and Connie Glynn, aka YouTube star Noodlerella. Let's tuck in. The chair is Olivia Allen.
So, let's break the ice. First question, should we go straight to James? What's your favourite influencer campaign that you've worked on that wasn't yours?
That I've worked on that wasn't mine, or that I've seen that wasn't mine. Oh, I've worked on loads that I have nothing to do with.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, I've seen two examples of influencer campaigns recently that kind of blew my mind a bit. One was exceptional in its simplicity. There is an American brand called Boxed Water, which is kind of an ethical water brand. And very simply, what they did was they tasked a load of Instagrammers and a load of Pinterest influencers. Read Pinfluencers. Ooh, doesn't that make you sick? But there we are. So the Pinfluencers and the Instagrammers were tasked with taking a picture, a single image, or finding a single image that made nature look wonderful. And they retweeted it with a simple hashtag that said retree. And as a result, the Boxed Water Company in the States would then plant 2 trees for every single image that was posted. So it was an organic feel-good story. They then sent the same influencers to the forests where those trees had been replanted. And it added content. And you kind of got that content cycle all owning issues around Boxed Water, but more naturally the environment. So it was a really nice one. And then the other one I saw towards the end of last year was British Airways. It stemmed from part of British Airways called their Innovation Lab. And what they did was they put a load of influencers, opinion formers and creators on a plane that left Silicon Valley and flew in a great big circle for 5 hours. And they asked all of the people on the plane to collaborate. And as a result, some of the collaborations, they selected 5 when they got back, and 5 of those different collaborations, they've moved forward to either business ventures or campaigns. So really nice actually using the collaborations between opinion formers. So yeah, 2 examples there.
Chris C.
I've just got one, being the L'Oreal Yours Truly campaign for their, I think it was True Match or something. They launched 23 shades of different kind of tones for different skin colour and tone colour, and they worked with 23 influencers and that was across YouTube and Instagram. They launched the digital campaign with Cheryl Cole online, and then continued that momentum on digital with the influencer campaign. And it just came across as very genuine, you know, real people kind of talking about makeup rather than kind of superstars. And then what followed that campaign was then the TVC. So just nice to sort of see the kind of shift being weighted a bit more towards digital.
Great, thank you. Mark?
I think one of the ones that I was kind of jealous to not have one of our clients work on is also one that I didn't like as well. I like the idea of it, which was the Coke TV campaign they did with Dodie. I think engaging a creator for a whole year and a set number of videos and actually having some continuity going on, that was something I was really impressed to see them do. But then I thought the actual content itself was quite cheesy, and I didn't like the whole product placement, the way they'd have like Dodie stood around drinking a bottle of Coke really obviously. It just, they could have done it a lot subtler. But I'd love to see that kind of campaign with it using a digital influencer, but more like the Nike FK Twigs campaign that's all over London at the moment. So the digital talent are actually getting some exposure outside of the screen as well. But then in return, the brand's getting the exposure to their fans. So that's kind of, if we could marry those two up together.
And Chris Jackson?
So to kind of, a lot of the brands that have kind of been spoken are quite big, like mega budget kind of campaigns and to get reach. One that really kind of stood out for me is I spent some time in San Francisco, and there's an app called the Outbound Collective. And essentially this provides you with guides on hikes and trails and trips that you can do across the US. And so what the Outbound did, they essentially got a range of influencers, and every day they get their different influencers going out across the US and going and taking these different hikes and trips. And so using like Instagram stories to essentially show people visually what's happening. So whenever you log on to their Instagram page, you're essentially going to be kind of transported to somewhere across the US of someone just having a rad trip and basically talking you through their experience. And this is just something which is so cheap, and these people are so passionate about doing it. And like almost like the opportunity to get on the channel, people are just hungry to do it and to kind of share their experience.
That's really lovely. Didn't know that example. And Connie, finally?
I actually have to say it's one of my own ones. Okay. Yeah, it was Carrie Hope Fletcher did it as well, and it was the Trolls campaign. So both of us went to voice characters, and it was so natural for us. We both do a lot of voice work. A lot of people come to our channels looking for that kind of stuff, and it was so natural, it was so fun. They just got me to vlog the experience of voicing this character, so it was the kind of content people expect anyway. Yeah, and it worked really well.
You did? And we'll stay with you, Connie. What's your worst example of a campaign? Doesn't have to be yours.
Okay, yeah, I'm not gonna name any names, obviously. Yeah. And there's no one in particular that I would choose. It's any campaign where they try and hide the fact it's an advertisement for something, because as soon as you're trying to hide it, I mean, our viewers aren't stupid. They know it's an advert. They're gonna think that you don't have faith in the product, which means everybody loses out.
Yeah, I agree. Mark?
I think, like I said, the Coke one kind of grated on me a bit, but I guess one of our bugbears, and James will probably agree with me, because James here as well, is like the amount of approaches you get from mobile apps, and there's only so many videos you can do where you incorporate mobile apps, so they start to get a bit...
The first ones do work well. Yeah. The first what's on your phone video always does great.
Then after that, it gets a bit tired.
Well, we all have mixed emotions on Best Fiends, for example.
Like, I love them.
That's a great. Best Fiends are great to work with because they seem to have an endless pot of money, which is obviously nice. So everyone wants to work with them. They give you the freedom to just do what you want on your channel as long as their messaging is incorporated in there. But we've never had like a video return from them where they've wanted changes. Everything's been signed off straight away.
I think because they're so easy to work with, it means that Best Fiends is everywhere, which means everyone's playing it because everybody knows about it. So I feel like it does work pretty well.
But then we have some creators who refuse to work with them because every other creator is working with them. So it kind of, you get
That's
a bit
quite
of both
an
there.
Obvious yeah. piece of brand content. That's natural. Chris Jackson, what's your worst?
So like the other guys, probably don't want to name names. But I think for me, it's when you just see brands basically work with an influencer once, they get the post out and it's gone again. It's like, what's the point? Like, this is about relationships, about keeping people engaged, and there's no authenticity. So basically, any campaign where you see a brand work with an influencer once, it's gone, is pretty much kind of gets a red cross from me.
James?
So I will name names, and I'll even no, slag off it, some of our own work, actually. So around 6, maybe 7 years ago, when we were first untapping this influencer space and looking at the effectiveness, we are the reason why most YouTubers at one stage or another have said, hey, get a free 30-day trial of the Audible service. So that's our fault. Sorry. And it started and it worked incredibly well, and it was incredibly effective. It was beating the traditional media. Just as an example, Absolute Radio delivered 300 trials in a month, and our YouTuber activity delivered 1,500 trials in a month. So everything was rosy and everything was brilliant. I'll never forget the post under a Fleur de Force video that said, and I quote, "If I see another YouTuber talking about Audible, I'm going to blow my brains out." Now, saturation of the market doesn't come close, and the saturation part isn't all of our fault, because people were seeing it from America, people were seeing it from other agencies. There was an absolute rush to jump on board the Audible then affiliate scheme. So the key lessons there were saturation of market, and we actually aligned their strategy to find dumb stuff, a big influence every month, a small influencer every month, and a niche influencer every month. So there was kind of a solution there. But yeah, to that point about mobile apps, when you do see it on every YouTube channel, it gets a little bit galling. So yeah.
And finally, other Chris.
So to sort of follow on from James, there was a kind of example that did the rounds in our team with Cortana and Clean Bandit. And this was a sort of, so Cortana is Microsoft's sort of answer to Siri. And it was a Clean Bandit, or a band that you might have heard of. It was like genuine content that was them kind of like having banter with the app and kind of, sort of just hanging out in their living room. But it just showed the very fine line between authentic influencer content and something that is very contrived and doesn't really hit the mark at all. So to kind of also be quite honest about one of our own campaigns, I won't name the client, but basically we created a piece of content with an influencer that encountered so many legal issues, and other brands being visible in this piece of content, that we ended up having to sort of censor so much stuff that it ended up looking like some kind of soft porn, kind of, you know, weird. Like everything's blurred out. It was just, you know, we just said, look, we got to a point where we're like, it's unusable. We don't want to use that anymore. But it does raise an interesting point, which we can probably go on to talk about, which is working with brands, legalities, and, you know, how vlogger content is very different to a TVC or digital video that goes out and needs to be ticked off by legal departments, effectively.
Do you find that your clients get quite possessive about other brands being mentioned in videos and things like that?
I mean, I think it depends on that conversation and that education piece, probably from the media agency side, with the marketing teams that we work with, because those marketing teams are kind of up to speed on the sort of the new ground that we're working in. But the legal teams are, I think, a lot more traditional, especially because their lawyers, their necks are effectively on the line if something is flagged and there is a complaint. So I think there's still a lot of murky space there. I think like ASA rules are very clear, but I think if anyone ever's done any IPA legal training with law firms, what I found, and this was just a year ago, they're great at giving you the law and the examples for print and TV and digital, but when it comes to social, they don't have any examples. The laws are sort of different, and that makes it problematic.
James, I feel like you're itching to say something.
Well, just in terms of that competitor brand and the soft porn phasing out things, we had a really interesting example last summer, and we were working on a campaign for Soap and Glory, the cosmetic brand, with an American influencer. We worked right across the summer across three different video pieces of content and some other bits and pieces. And Soap and Glory, I didn't know this before I started working on the brand, is owned by the Walgreens Boots Alliance in the States. And so when Andrea Russett, our lead influencer, was talking about the products, purely declared, so the products that she was recommending that she would look to get herself festival ready, she also said after a festival she likes to relax with a candle, a scented candle. And the scented candle was from Target. Now, Target are a direct competitor of Walgreens. Again, you might not know that. Certainly most viewers wouldn't have known that, so it was a really tough one. I saw it from the influencer's point of view. None of my audience will know that Soap and Glory is owned. I completely saw it from the brand's point of view, that Walgreens, that it's them paying for it. So there's often murky waters, particularly with ownership structures of big corporates. So yeah, it's a tough one.
I think from the kind of brand perspective, the way we kind of treat it is you kind of look at things on a scale. Like if this is a big campaign which is happening, then you want to probably control the messaging and the products within that. But a lot of almost like the day-to-day evergreen stuff, like I'd prefer not to kind of get hung up on what they can and can't use. Like ideally, if we've done this well, our product should be front and center, but and then have more of a discussion about the creative, less so about what they can't use. Because if they want to use trainers or whatever that they're working out in day-to-day, then they should do. They feel comfortable in it versus like force fitting every piece of super dry in there.
So I want to ask you guys what you feel that, because obviously everyone on this panel comes from a different part of organising an influencer campaign, and I want to ask you guys what you feel your value is. Obviously, Connie, yours is probably quite self-explanatory, but...
Yeah, I have a really good relationship with my viewers. There's a lot of trust already there, so they're going to trust anything that I say is good. So you've got my entire audience at your disposal.
Obviously, as a manager, I'm there to kind of be the middleman between Connie and the agency or the brand, and do the negotiations for her, free up her time so she can concentrate on creating content or writing books or the projects she wants to be doing. But also, I think for a creator, they sometimes need someone who can be the bad cop as well. So if they're not into something, they're not having to say directly to the brand they don't want to do it. They can have someone else who can be the voice of reason and do it for them. Yeah, so... I guess that's our main role. Like you mentioned, we're a bit different to a lot of the other agencies that manage talent. We, both myself and James, come from more traditional backgrounds. I'm from more the music industry side of things, and James, TV and radio. So all the guys we work with are people who want to do stuff beyond YouTube. So that's our main focus with Free Focus, is to go out and find us other opportunities, like getting Penguin book deals, or we've got people on BBC Three and BBC One, etc. But we realise the value of the brand deals, and the money they can bring in can essentially fund the other projects that are the more kind of passion projects as well.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Chris?
I kind of feel a bit of like a negotiator, because I've got like our chief executive wanting to make sure the brand is front and centre and we get the most kind of value for Superdry. And then the other part of me is like, we're going to be working with these people day to day, and kind of really understanding that like an influencer isn't just impressions and reach and engagements, but actually like these people have careers, they have aspirations. And for me, it's about building relationships and long-term relationships with people. So on the one hand, we want to be able to kind of get the best possible return for our company, but equally knowing that actually we kind of structure this in the right way, that we can have a longer term relationship with people and really kind of foster collaboration. So always kind of almost balancing that kind of negotiation between two parties.
Great. And James?
So it's a bit of a weird one with social circles, because we kind of do two different jobs. So I suppose the first thing is to explain the value of a specialist agency. So there's that element of, there won't be the most obvious talent partnerships in the world, and we work with every agent, we work with lots of talent direct, our database is about 50,000-60,000 strong. So there's that element of finding the talent. There's also the fact that we have wonderful people on the team, like Becky, who sat behind Olivia. So we have talent liaison, and Becky's a YouTuber herself. So we like to think that we have a better understanding of the space. And then the other side of social circle is the platform. So it's a database, but it's also an analytics tool. So we can monitor what activity is working hardest for our clients. So that's kind of what we add. We know our shit and we can analyze it.
I think from a media agency perspective, there's obviously the kind of heavy lifting contracts, negotiations that we would sort of do on behalf of our clients, and also make sure that we are briefing out the market so that we're getting the best deals and the best talent. I think that's important. I think we obviously are representatives of our clients, and these guys are kind of more representative of the talent, and we kind of act as mediators to kind of try and make that process as seamless as possible, because there is a lot involved in the background, you know, to get a great piece of video from, you know, the talent. So there's all of that. And then also I'd say we do a lot of the so obviously the talent are very creative, but we try and do as much kind of creative kind of direction and strategy around why we are working, with who we're working, how it kind of ladders up into an overall strategy for that brand, whether that's campaign basis or for the year's objectives. So, you know, we're not just kind of throwing out a budget and saying, okay, great, we got really good engagement. It's like, how does that actually have a direct impact on where we're trying to get the brand and the client to?
I also think with agencies, both whether they be specialist agencies or wider agency groups, it's really nice to have a big understanding of how the influencer activity, so the creator piece, fits in with a much wider strategy. So even if it isn't obvious, so even if the YouTube content isn't on a TV ad or on the side of a bus, it's what is happening there and how does it fit in. So there's definitely a value there.
So Chris Jackson, I attended recently a breakfast by an influence marketing platform that they hosted, strangely with a piece of it, an agency press company. And the moral of their breakfast was that they think that brands should work directly with influencers and there shouldn't be any agencies involved in the process. And I'd be interested to get your opinion on that as someone that works for a brand. Do you see the value in agencies being involved in the process?
Yeah, I think they definitely have a role. I think the thing for me is, from working with different agencies over the last couple of years, is that just sometimes people kind of take the easy option. Like, the amount of times I see the same names presented to us, it's just a bit tiresome. And that, like, we're looking, when we want to partner with an agency, to find new talent, not existing talent.
Yeah.
So they definitely have a role in there. And then I think just on the kind of negotiation side, just making it as streamlined as possible. Like, we recently worked on a campaign last year, and it just took a lot of time to basically get everything signed and sealed. And by the time we got everything done, like, we'd almost nearly missed the boat, and then you don't have enough time to kind of plan and schedule the content. So I think it's just understanding both parts and making sure it's as kind of quick and as easy as possible, and understanding that there's a kind of a business need there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, Mark. So obviously you're getting lots of opportunities coming inbound and doing some kind of outbound yourselves.
when you evaluate an opportunity for one of your influencers or for Connie, how do you kind of see the difference between like editorial and advertorial content? So do you say yes to much free stuff on your talent's behalf?
I'd never sign off on anything on their behalf without checking with them first, but it's weighing up the value of what they're getting. So one of the things I'll often know that our influencers will be up for doing where there's maybe not payment is if there's a trip involved. So if it's going to Pixar, for example, for a week in San Francisco, and there's lots of value there. Becky and Connie both went on that one. They're quite happy to do that for out a fee because they're getting a thing. But although even that said, only up to a certain level. I've got, like, when you get kind of Emma Blackery's up 1.3 million now, she's a bit more kind of picky over what she'll do, and she knows her reach as well and stuff. So there's weighing that side of it up. Obviously the trolls example with DreamWorks, that was paid for. It was an ad, but we took a lower fee than we would usually do because Connie wants to get into voice acting, and now she can say she's in a Oscar nominated film, etc. So there's there's weighing up all that value of it there. But then I guess one of the things me and Connie sometimes disagree on is the more PR side of it. So Connie did 6 weeks of writing a column for Maximum Pop, and I felt that was something good for Connie to do because it was getting her exposure to a potentially new audience.
You were right about that one.
But this is one of the arguments I have a lot of the time, is when I'm presenting something that's more press orientated, so whether it's writing a column for Maximum Pop or doing something with a magazine, etc., a lot of the time YouTubers don't look at it the same way as a musician or an actor would do, where they're actually getting PR for the thing they're trying to promote. Connie's initial reaction was, well, what am I going to get out of it? They're going to get more people from me tweeting about this article than I'm going to get seeing it from their organic reach. And she was right in that respect. But it's the same with the Made For You campaign that YouTube did just before Christmas. We had Emma Blackery on that. No payment involved, but it was this huge campaign that in honestly didn't drive any extra subscribers to Emma's channel, I don't think. We didn't see any kind of increase in growth. Her growth was kind of the same as it has been all year. But what it did mean is when I was pitching her for record deals or for book deals, etc., suddenly the people I was speaking to who aren't as ingrained in this scene as we are knew who she was because they'd seen her on the tube on the way in, or they'd seen a bus flying down Oxford Street and stuff. So it's weighing up that value.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Speaking of free, does everyone else feel like they get asked for a lot of free stuff still, or people kind of coming to terms with fees?
Yeah, I mean, I think those days are sort of long gone. I don't think we would ever, well, we never offer that as an option, really, because you know, you're getting great content for one thing, and that isn't free. You know, I think it's another part of a marketing budget that teams are now seen as very much a part of their strategy rather than just an add-on. I mean, I was just going to say on kind of working with talent, although they're obviously like humans and people, and sometimes a skeptical view of it could just be it's someone in their room talking to a camera. That is actually a very difficult thing to do if anyone has tried to do it and make it interesting or appealing or engaging. It doesn't actually happen, you know, overnight. There's a lot of editing that goes involved as well. And I mean, the way that I present talent to our clients, it's really very much a partnership of two brands. It's not, you know, one person, a client working with, you know, a human. These are brands that have built themselves up over years. They've got a lot of followers. They've got pretty impressive cost per view and cost per engagements. You know, they are brands that you're working with. And you know, if you just look at Connie, she's got her own book coming out. You know, that, you know, it's not just someone making videos. There's a lot more to it. So I think there's a lot more respect around that, definitely.
Yeah, and the videos take time to make as well, and the content producing. So if you're doing something for free, you're essentially turning down potentially other paid work or your own content as well that you want to do. And no creator wants to bombard their channel with ad after ad after ad. So it's kind of prioritizing which ones are going to be the best overall to do.
I'm definitely more open to doing things for free on my vlogging channel, simply because they're more experiences. So for example, again with Becky, we went to Alton Towers for I think it was called Scarefest, and that worked really well because it was something that we would have done anyway, and I could just vlog it, and it's very natural, so I don't mind those ones so much for free content.
Chris, going back to what you were just saying about people aren't expecting things for free, do you feel like your clients are coming to you asking to do influencer stuff, or is it something that you're still pitching to them for them to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a bit of both. I think depending on lots of factors like their objectives, the type of brand that they are, if they want to, you know, be a bit more personable, a bit more relevant and human, and a less kind of aspirational and glossy, I think. And then other times we will take a look at the budget and the strategy and think, actually, if we're going to do this for a certain amount of time, the best use of that budget is to work with X number of influencers over 6 months, as opposed to putting it all behind one campaign that will have a spike and then drop off and be forgotten about.
And other Chris, I mean, we all have stakeholders that we've got to convince to do this. How do you convince your stakeholders that they should be working with influencers?
So we're
asking you for it.
We kind of have the opposite problem. Like, everyone in the company wants to do work with influencers, and it's like they're just pumped on it. Whatever, like, you go into a meeting, first thing, like, okay, what are we going to do with influencers on it? And it's kind of like manage their expectations. And I think it's a really interesting kind of discussion we're having today, because like the kind of the role of influencers in terms of marketing does seem to be almost at, like, at its peak, and it almost feels that like there's going to be that point in terms of like the bubble will eventually burst, because people have overinvested to a point, and actually people start to ask kind of harder questions about what are we getting back for this. So a lot of my job is just kind of explaining to people, well, why do you want to work with an influencer? And actually, when you get into it, like, actually probably an influencer isn't right for it, or it isn't important to have someone who's got X 100,000 or million. Because one of the things I saw at Superdry in terms of how we've been using influencers to date is that when I joined, we were only interested in basically getting people to kind of talk about our product on their channels. And then if you kind of flip back and looked at Superdry's own social channels, they weren't very good. And so you've got this kind of disconnect between getting on like fabulous people and then not really having the content on your own site to back it up. So actually now we've been saying, well, we probably need to work with some smaller, really cool content creators to tell a better story about our brand, so that when we do work with these kind of A-listers, that is a kind of a stronger story there. So yeah, there's a hell of an appetite, and we're just kind of trying to dampen it down and use it in the right way, because otherwise I think people will expect a lot and then it might not deliver in the right way.
I think, just jumping in, sorry, I think Chris makes an incredibly important point, and that is that there's, with every influencer marketing piece, whether it's a single video, a single Instagram post, there are two different benefits. And one is the reach and the scale of that social placement, so reaching the audience, but the other is the resulting authentic content. So it might be that you get that holy grail of marrying the two perfectly, and the right audience see the right piece of authentic content. But actually, if something has a small reach, or if a piece of social content isn't that wide reaching, it's still got a huge use for the brand. Dumb stuff, they can retweet it and suddenly they can showcase that small reaching influencer, a real person, has created that authentic content. So yeah, it's about finding the right match, definitely.
Connie, when you're working with a brand, what's kind of at the heart of what you're thinking? Are you thinking about the audience, or are you thinking about the brand, or both? Or
the audience always comes first, because if I don't put the audience first and I'm making something that's just for this brand, then again, it's about the faith the audience has in me. Because if they feel like I'm putting the product first, they're going to think I don't actually have a lot of faith in it, because it wouldn't match with my usual content. Yeah. So I have been doing this for 3-4 years, so I do know what my audience wants to see. I know what they like. I know what they expect of me as well. So when I say something won't work, even if the brand is sure it will, I do know better.
That's really interesting. Sorry, lost my place. And Mark, when you're kind of working on a brand deal with Connie, are you kind of whispering in her ear, like, you know, adds, or with anyone, add some added value, or kind of what's your take on things? Are you kind of going by what the brand is expecting, or are you...
Well, I think we get everything kind of clarified at the deal point. So before any filming starts or anything, we discuss what the concept's going to be. We get a clear brief from the agency or the brand with what exactly needs to be in. And as long as everything's agreed in the first place, then there shouldn't really be any issues moving forward.
Yeah.
Connie's one who I don't really need to get in her ear. Like, once the deal's agreed and she's happy with what needs to be in, she'll deliver it. There's others that might be a bit more fussy or might try and push the boundaries a little bit, and I have to sometimes remind them of the deal points that have been agreed. Like, if you want this video to get approved and you want to get paid, then you need to think about this. But no, Connie's right. If the talent know their audience, they know what's going to be liked or not liked, but it's my job to know that at the point of negotiation in the first place. I've got Lex Croucher, who we work with. She also has a full-time job, so she doesn't have time to be making loads of changes to her videos. She's a bit of an activist, she's vegan, she's quite politically charged, so with all her brand deals, she tends to do a script in before she even films anything, so like a full script, and that works for some people, not for others. But again, at least with Lex, then we know the brand's happy with the content before it even gets filmed, and then that avoids loads of reshoots and things as well.
Mark is a really good negotiator. I know I always go on about how great my management is. But if there's something I really don't want to do, we can offer instead an extra tweet or an extra Instagram post, something like that, just to show the brand that there is still this value, even if you don't believe it's there.
So you happy kind of with giving added value on top of things?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if there's something they want me to do that I'm incredibly against, but it was something they really thought was going to help. If you offer a tweet or an extra tweet or an extra Instagram post, it weighs out for them.
Something I've noticed recently when we're working on kind of big campaigns with multiple influencers involved is that our client, the brand or the agency, tend to judge back on which influencers they like the most based on added value. That person was great, you know, irrelevant of how much they paid, they did an extra Instagram post for
us. Thing is, if the brand is great and we're working really well together, it's very natural, they'll often be added value anyway, because I'll be tweeting about it naturally 2 weeks later just because I've enjoyed it so much.
And what's your take on that, Mark, kind of giving extra than...
Yeah, I think again we get the bare minimum kind of agreed in the deal, so that there's no breach of contract. But what was the app that you did that you play it all the time anyway, and then you're
Pack of Pets.
Pack of Pets. So we did this. I know earlier I said we don't like mobile apps, but this was a game that Connie was already playing anyway,
and they didn't have a lot of budget, but I just knew everyone was going to love this.
But they got so much extra content because all Connie's fans started screenshotting their own Pack of Pets, and then she was retweeting the ones that she liked and things, and that kind of interaction can work really well and give the extra value side of it. Coming up with the actual concept in the first place is 99% of the battle. So like, we worked with you with Emma on the Instax campaign, and that was a perfect timing for us. We got the brief through probably a month before Emma was due to go on tour, her first UK headline tour with her band. And I think two of the six influences you were looking to get, one was travel, one was music. And I said, great, we've got a musician going on tour. We can cover both of those for you. Emma was already planning on doing a tour diary vlog of her time on tour, on the road, and all that jazz. And we had meet and greets going on at the shows, so we were able to give extra content to Instax in terms of they sent us enough film so that every fan who did a meet and greet could take a picture away that was taken on the camera. And it was just a nice fit because a tour diary documenting the tour, but also documenting it with the Instax camera at the same time.
Definitely.
So if you can get the actual idea right in the first place, then that's the best way to move forward.
Slightly different question, change the tune a bit. James, let's start with you. What learning can the influencer marketing space take or learn from other more traditional media? Are we seeing a level of maturity in the market?
I think we're starting to see a level of maturity in the marketplace. Yes, there are specialist agencies like ours. There are people that know what they're talking about. There aren't people saying, will you do a video for free if we give you a free fridge? That happens less, you know what I mean? A real world example. I think in terms
of... We offered a mattress. Actually, two different mattress companies last month.
Show off. Nice. All the glamour work, yeah. I think there are learnings all over the place. So because I know how to roll and have a good time, on Monday night I was at a media society event about the dying of print. So that was rock and roll. And their conclusions there was that, all right, newspapers are the printed word in newspapers is dying, but magazines are actually having something of a renaissance because magazines have learnt how to service niche audiences and they've learnt how to diversify. So the learnings there with influencers are which audience are you servicing brilliantly in terms of how you're working with them and what else could you do? So an influencer's already starting to do that. We work with gaming influencers. We work with specific niches and they're also looking to diversify across events and other revenue streams, to put it in that awful media turn of phrase. The key learnings from radio. Radio for years and years in the commercial radio space was always known as the 7% medium. It could not get any more of ad revenue than 7%. So it looked hard at itself and it learnt, old language, to deliver sponsorship and promotions, now branded content, in really effective ways. And guess what? The revenue's grown. It's now a 10 or 11% medium. I'm sure Chris will put me right with, I've got the wrong figure, but something like that. There we are. So where, what the key learning there is that radio's turned in on itself and it's looked to deliver more meaningful connections with its audience. Dumb stuff, if a presenter's saying something's cool, then people will believe it. And that's happening in the influence space, more authentic content. And then the other, looking at it from a macro level, is a maturity of practitioners within the business. What I mean by that is you get businesses that last week were a viral distribution network and this week suddenly they're an influencer marketing specialist. You get PR agencies that make one appointment and they stick them at the front of a queue and suddenly they've got an influencer marketing division. It's the same team implementing it. So there has to be a maturity. There has to be a level of expertise. Because guess what? It's quite a lot of money to work on a really effective and influential marketing campaign. So you can't just have people that are suddenly changing the ideas of what it is they do for a living every day. So, yeah, that's the kind of key learnings and the parallels with other parts of the media and marketing mix, I think. Cool.
Chris, at the end, Chris, do you have any inputs to that?
I mean, for me, the maturity of the market now is probably accountability and measurement of success. What does 100,000 views actually mean? You know, we measure on top of that sort of metric, the level of conversation around the video, the brand, the sentiment of that conversation, because obviously an increase in positive sentiment generally leads to more positive brand affinity, and therefore you would expect that to lead on to later acquisition and sales. So, I mean, that's the kind of model, but it's still kind of a bit hypothetical. And I think, you know, we're all kind of guilty of making it look good, but actually maybe we need to in the ways in which other types of media have sort of managed that analysis of acquisition stage and or even just brand uplift, really. And that's maybe a conversation that media agencies need to have with YouTube and say, you know, how are we actually measuring this and how can we report that this video that cost this amount of money actually led to this much brand uplift. So that would be the one for me.
Right.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, I think if I was you guys, I'd take a real look at the outdoor space in the US. If you, one of the things I learned when I was working in California with GoPro is like the power of actually just having an ambassador network, as opposed to thinking of influencers as almost like this singular kind of entity. Actually, if you're kind of smart and you build a team of ambassadors that you have on retainer for the course of so many months, over the course of the year, then you can actually get some really good content, kind of set stipulations in terms of like videos or photos on a monthly basis, and then it works a lot more effectively. Patagonia have a really nice model. They have quite a broad athlete and ambassador team that they work with. They're all obviously kitted out in their gear. And then essentially these guys will send in their photos of them out or their videos doing stuff. And then if Patagonia want to use it, they'll basically give them an agreed rate for the kind of the photo use on their social channels, or if they're going to use it in email marketing, and that works really well for them. And they're also just quite smart as well, of like asking people like when they're sending in a photo, like give us three different captions So then you've got three different stories that you can think to kind of tell about a particular image, as opposed to just being kind of stuck with one image and like not really sure where it kind of fits. So yeah, definitely, if you get chance, like for me, like coming in and seeing the fashion industry kind of pisses me off. It's a bit boring, to be honest, just seeing people hold up a cardigan and talk about how soft and fluffy it is. Like, I could not give a shit about that. Tell me a story, show me something interesting, show me that you got a personality, and then I think that's going to be much more interesting, because otherwise it's just, I don't know, people will start to switch off because they see it day in, day out.
Do you kind of feel, Connie, that you're showing what kind of works better, like naturally integrating a product into your video, or more like a show and tell?
Definitely naturally integrating. I can't remember the last time I did a sort of show and tell video. It's been so long. But yeah, you'll get a lot more if you wear something and just saying in the description box, this outfit is from here, or having it as your top comment if you're wondering where my outfit is from. And then you're wearing it in Instagram photos, etc. That works so well.
Yeah. At Social Circle, we have a list of the 7 things that make you scream when running an influencer marketing campaign. What is one thing that makes each of you pull your hair out? Should we start with you, Connie, and work?
Yeah, the thing that annoys me the most, and I'm sure it probably annoys you the most, is when you are asked to remove something that wasn't mentioned in the brief. A brand should just, because we give them so much time to plan the perfect brief, have everything that I should say and everything I absolutely should not say, and then to suddenly come back and say, oh, actually, can you say this? It's much harder to add in content than it is to remove content. So if you need something said, you have to put it in the brief beforehand. Otherwise, it's not happening.
What? It's hard to pick just one. I think, and I get why we get asked this, but it's when you get that initial email through and it's, what's your rate? And it's like, well, why don't you give us a bit more info on what the project is, what you're looking to achieve, and we can look at, evaluate not just the reach that the guys have, but how much work's going to have to go into it. So we always have our like kind of rack rate card where we have in our mind what we're looking to get based on the reach of the guys. But everything's such like case by case basis that we'd much rather discuss in more detail what you're looking for and things. So that's one of ours. And getting asked for the rate card over and over again by the same agency as well. We're always like, can't you just save it? Come on.
Chris?
Yeah, I think for me is when money is the first question. Like, it should be a creative discussion first, and then you work out what's achievable. So I think like if you could start on that basis, that would be a much stronger place to be.
I'll go with a kind of a lack of, how does one argue with this, right? So we're working with a young YouTuber who is 10 years of age, who I won't name, and he his agent is his father. So we're chasing him to meet a deadline that his father has signed off on a contract. And the conversation that you get back is, well, he's got to do his homework and then he can look at the video. Where'd you go? You can't say my brand deal's more important than his homework and his education. How does that work? So that's kind of very kind of a particular frustration. I think if you like a more professional one and a broader one, is a lack of understanding on, if you like, questioning the brief. So exactly to Chris's point earlier, why do you want to work with influencers? What are you looking for? Because there might be many different approaches to work with an influencer. There might be many different influencers. So a lack of understanding on why influencer marketing is right.
So I think for me, it would probably be the legal issue, which I touched on at the start, and how legal teams can really kill creative just by cutting and slicing up until you're left with something that they could have just paid a creative agency to do and to put out. You know, that's not what we're trying to achieve here. It's more of a organic branded piece of content that has that authenticity and kind of realness about it. And with that comes a bit of rough around the edges, I guess. So there would be that one. Yeah, and then the other one I was thinking about was kind of working with managers, actually, but in the sense that when you get a brief signed off and it's very clear what you want to do, but then you sort of say, so how's the video going to look? And the response might be, well, it's like, well, they're just going to kind of freestyle it, don't worry, it's going to look great, they know their audience. And it's like, okay, I get all of that, but you know, this isn't a video that they're just making for their audience. They're actually making this and being paid for on behalf of the brand, and there needs to be a little bit of, okay, we get that. This isn't just Connie talking about her day to day. This is Connie talking about a brand on behalf of a brand. So I think there needs to be, there usually is, but some, in some cases, there's this sort of protection around talent that they can't ever be questioned and they can't ever be held accountable for the content that they create. And I think if you're being paid for something, then you absolutely can, but within reason and very respectful.
Yeah, I mean that's again when it comes down to just managing the brief between everyone and the creative in the first place. And I think if a brand's wanting to work with a creator, they'll have, you'd like to think they'll have studied their channel, they'll have seen, yeah, the kind of style of content they do, and that's why they want to work with them, is because they like that style of video. So
exactly, I just think stepping in there, it's all about the processes, isn't it? I mean, at Social Circle we have the contract at first stage, but then a video briefing document that gets signed by the client, gets signed by the talent or the management, and gets signed by us, so that everybody's in agreement, and that says what you can say, what you can't say, and has a broad creative outlook. And then the other thing that we always say is we never ever offer our clients approval, we always offer our clients veto. And it's a subtle distinction, because creators shouldn't have their work approved, but if the video briefing document isn't met, then we can say, well, actually we can veto because that wasn't done or that was done. So yeah, it's a really good point. It's about sorting processes out, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll always walk away at the point of that video brief if we don't think it's going to fit. We had one with Connie that was quite high money offered to do video promoting a glasses brand, ordering glasses online, and they essentially wanted it to just look like a TV advert for their product, whereas we were going back saying, well, actually, if you look at Connie's channel, her biggest videos are her impressions videos. Some of them are over 5 million views. If you want, what we can do is...
Such a shame. The video we offered was so good.
Well, you did it anyway, yeah, without their brand in it,
yeah,
the end, didn't you?
Yeah, it was going to be just impressions of characters with glasses, because there's so many beloved glasses characters, and they just couldn't understand why that would work. Thank you very much for coming, everyone, and thank you to the wonderful panel.
Well, that's it for this special bonus edition of the Media Podcast. Thanks so much to Social Circle for sponsoring it. If you would like to fund a future episode of the pod, then do get in touch at themediapodcast.com. And that applies to you as well, of course, if you're an individual donor. It's thanks to your donations that we're able to keep the show on the road. And I'm pleased to say we will be back with an ordinary episode of the pod next week. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer, Matt Hill for PPM Productions. We'll see you next week.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.